The Overture 2, Mozart's opera, The Marriage of Figaro. Sir Charles Mackerras leading the Scottish Chamber Orchestra. Here on Live and Local on FM 90.9, I'm Kevin Kelly. The show is your connection to local performances. And among the performers this weekend are a number of our area symphony orchestras, including the Champaign-Urbana Symphony, Saturday night at the Krannert Center in Urbana, and the Millikan Decatur Symphony, also Saturday night at the Kirkland Fine Arts Center in Decatur. And on today's program, I will be talking with, respectively, Michael Luxner of the Millikan Decatur Symphony Orchestra, who are giving their annual Young Artists Concert, and Stephen Alltop, music director of the Champaign-Urbana Symphony, and music by Piston, Mozart, and Beethoven. But first, Michael Luxner, thanks very much, as always, for joining us on the show.
Always a pleasure, Kevin.
I had introduced the whole show today in my promo by saying it's a sort of reigning orchestral concerts in our area this weekend. Champaign-Urbana Symphony has a concert, and I'll be talking with their conductor coming up, and also Illinois Symphony Chamber Orchestra having concerts this weekend as well, and we had that chat yesterday.
I could have told you this several months ago when I was trying to hire my musicians. It gets very, very difficult when three of the regional orchestras have concerts on the same weekend. Sometimes it happens, and it was kind of a real white-knuckle contracting season.
Well, actually, since you brought that up, yeah. a little bit about the orchestra. Obviously, you've got some students. It's Millikan-Decatur, so it's a kind of a combination university community orchestra.
It is. It's a hybrid. Well, it's not a community orchestra. I always have to stop people when they use that particular word, because that implies amateurism and unpaid or volunteer musicians. And the Millikan-Decatur Symphony is a hybrid orchestra. But it's a hybrid between a professional orchestra and a curricular student orchestra. Everyone in the orchestra is either a Millikan student or a per-service regional professional freelance musician who is paid at the same scale that compares with the ISO or the Peoria or any of the regional orchestras. And we all draw from the same talent pool. It's a very unique model. I have, in fact, given presentations at national meetings of three different organizations for orchestras, for universities, and for conductors on the model, the governing model for this orchestra. And I have yet to hear of another one in the country that does something quite like it.
Really?
Yeah.
That seems surprising for some reason. You'd think it would be obvious to a worthwhile thing to do.
Well, it does, but I think it would have to occur in just the right place at just the right time. If, for instance, a university chose to initiate an orchestral model of this type in a city that already had a functioning professional nonprofit orchestra, of course it wouldn't work. But somehow or other, the way this all evolved over the decades took place in such a way that that the orchestra serves the purpose of the city's orchestra, in the same way that the Peoria Symphony is Peoria's orchestra, or the CUSO is Champaign-Urbana's orchestra, and there is no other Decatur Symphony. So the corporate and business and civic leaders who would normally support and be the governing board for such an orchestra are in fact a support guild board, and they raise the same amount of money that they would if they were a governing board, but they, instead of governing, they turn that money over to Millikan, who in turn operates the orchestra from within the university infrastructure, thus creating all kinds of efficiencies with regard to just insurance and a concert hall and library and all the things that that create overhead for a freestanding organization. So all the money can go straight into the pockets of paid professional musicians, and we can have a very high level orchestra, which at the same time is the curricular orchestra for the students who play orchestral instruments.
And therefore, those students get the benefit of sitting next to professionals.
Yeah, and a number of those professionals are the teachers of those instruments on the Millikan faculty. So it is as a teaching synergy. It's absolutely fabulous. The faculty loves it, and the students love it, and we get to do, you know, major repertoire on the same kind of schedule that a fully professional orchestra would have, because I know that a lot of the preliminary work is being taken care of in the studios before we get into rehearsal.
Well, since we're talking about students, of course, this is the annual Young Artists Concert for the Millikan Decatur Symphony, which starts out with a competition in the fall.
Right. As most music schools do, we have an annual competition here. It's called the Concerto Aria Competition, and the winners earn the opportunity to be soloists with the orchestra on this particular concert.
And how are the students chosen to participate in the contest? Do they just say, "I feel like doing it"? So
no, they have to be approved by their studio teacher. And several of the areas here, say the voice area or the woodwind area, sometimes have preliminary screening to make sure that their area is represented at the highest level before the final judging takes place with the outside judges. I pretty much, the only rules for entry are that you have to be a Millikan student who is in a degree program. You have to be currently taking private lessons. You have to be in a studio. Other than that, there are no other rules. You don't have to be a performance major, say. You don't even have to be a music major. This competition has been won by people who have been music theater majors in a couple cases, and I think even completely non-performance majors on a few occasions, and that's the only rule. So it's not an educational competition. It's not the kind of thing that's a way of getting constructive criticism. We have judges. You yourself have been a judge several times, and I tell the judges, this competition is to identify people that you would want to hear as soloists with an orchestra in a large hall, students who can pull this off. And there's no set number of winners. We can have up to four, but there could be zero winners if no one meets that standard. It's about excellence. It's not about who's necessarily just the best. And this year we only had two winners.
And
good ones they are.
Yeah. Well, and as you said, I've helped to judge this before, and in fact did so this last fall. But I sort of forget. I know there were a number of vocalists, and inevitably each year it seems like at least one vocalist wins, and that happened this year. Her name, Chelsea Wright.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes those vocalists do come out of the music theater program. Mm-hmm. What's her concentration?
She is a vocal performance major.
And we led in to this conversation with the overture to the opera from which one of her winning tunes
Well, that's
from.
The one actually determined the other. I never program this concert in full until the competition has occurred, even though I have a brochure for the season as a whole that goes out at the end of the preceding year. What I'll usually do is announce one major repertoire work for this concert, but leave the rest pretty open, because you never know what the competition will yield. If it turns up, four marimba concertos or some things that are obviously going to eat up a lot of rehearsal time, that would put limitations on what else I can program. And sometimes, as this year, the repertoire that's to be performed by the soloists helps determine the rest of the program. So with the first young artist soloist beginning with a Mozart aria from Figaro, why not program the Figaro overture? It's great programming. It's a great piece for the students to learn, and uses the same orchestra, and it makes a great lead-in. So that's really where that came from.
Well, and in that case, it seemed logical enough to play a recording of that same piece. Have you done the opera? And if so, or even if not, do you recall what she's singing about here? What's happening in the opera?
Chelsea's a mezzo, and she is Cherubino. This is Cherubino's big aria. Ogni ghiaccio, ogni donna cangiar di colore, ogni donna mi fa palpitar, ogni donna mi fa palpitar, ogni donna mi fa palpitar.
Anna-Sophie von Otter singing a well-known aria from The Marriage of Figaro by Mozart, Non so più, in the character of Cherubino, and James Levine leading the Met Opera Orchestra. That's going to be on the program. The Young Artist Concert by the Millikan Decatur Symphony Saturday night at 7:30. Michael Luxner is the conductor of the orchestra. He's my guest. And Chelsea Wright will sing that on the concert. She also is doing another aria of, considerable contrast.
Well, yes, you could call it the other side of the coin. Both of these arias have, well, to put it bluntly, have sex as their essential motivating factor. And after portraying the youthful teenage agitated exuberance of Cherubino, Chelsea will sing the role of Delilah, which is just the complete opposite. In Gounod's Samson and Delilah, Delilah is mature and languorous and sensuous, and she is quite overtly seducing Samson in this, her big aria, and again, one of the great mezzo showpiece arias that keeps coming up. My heart melts at your sweet voice. Fill me with joy is what she's singing in this very exotic and almost you could almost smell the perfume as in so many of these pieces in which romantic composers portray an Eastern or Asian locale in a quasi exotic faux Oriental manner.
Well, we are going to leave that one.
Leave that for the imagination.
Well, we're going to leave that also to the concert, so we'll let people no preview of that one other than Michael's graphic description.
Sorry.
Oh, no, it's fine.
I won't get you in trouble with the FCC, I promise.
You didn't say any of the bad words.
Okay.
The other winner this year, as you pointed out earlier, there's just two, Adam Blakey. Did you tell me he's won this contest before?
Yes, he's a two-time winner. He won it in his sophomore year, and we do. That's one of the rules is if someone wins, but there's no limit on the number of times someone can win. But if someone wins, we ask them to take the next year off, and he did, and he's back. He's now in his senior year. He won again, and fabulous player, also an extremely versatile player. He came into Millikan as primarily a jazzer, and he is a lead player in all the jazz programs around here. But in addition to his legit chops, he has really branched out as a doubler, and he plays bass. He's the regular bass clarinetist in the orchestra when he's not a soloist with it. He's played with the faculty woodwind quintet. He's broadened his doubling ability not just to the typical flute and clarinet, but the double reeds as well, and he expects to go on to grad school next year in multiple woodwinds somewhere.
Well, as I think I probably said to somebody when we were actually judging the competition, he would be a great candidate, it sounds like, to play the one book in West Side Story that asks for seven different woodwind instruments.
I'm sure that's the kind of thing, yeah, and he's just a very modest, plain-spoken young man, a native of Decatur, and he'd take a look and say, yeah, I can do that, no problem.
Well, he certainly can. I thought he did a phenomenal job, and he's going to be playing a concerto for alto sax and a string orchestra, right?
Yeah, this is the Glazunov Office score just for strings. And a wonderful piece it is, too. It's hard, mostly because of it goes into some very flat keys. The main key of the piece is E-flat major. But from there, whenever he goes anywhere else, he tends to go to the left side rather than the right side. He doesn't start losing flats. He starts gaining them. And the whole last half of the piece is a pretty intricate double fugue that goes off into E-flat minor and G-flat major. And so it's not the normal lay of the land for string players. So it does take some work, but it's really worth it because once the notes get under their fingers, the counterpoint is just really beautifully done, and the flat keys really give the string orchestra this wonderfully burnished sound. It's really quite well written for strings once you've got them at a certain level.
Well, it's a longish piece that is more or less continuous. Here's the opening of the alto sax concerto by Alexander Glazunov. The performer here is Sore Rabari, presumably under the baton of a relative, Alexander Rabari, and the BRT Philharmonic Orchestra of Brussels. This piece will be on the concert by the Young Artist Concert by the Millick and Decatur Symphony this Saturday evening. Michael Luxner, the conductor, is my guest on Live and Local. The opening of the sax concerto by Alexander Glazunov, Sore Rabari, the soloist with the BRT Philharmonic Orchestra of Brussels, and Adam Blakey of Decatur, specifically now at Millikan University, will play that piece with the Millikan Decatur Symphony Saturday night at the Kirkland Fine Arts Center on campus there. Michael Luxner will conduct. He's my guest this portion of Live and Local. You have another young artist collaboration here, which doesn't always show up on this concert, does it?
No, we've been doing it about every other year for a while. The Decatur Youth Symphony is now in its, I think, second or third year under the direction of Dr. Neil Smith, a music education professor here at Millikan. And he has instigated this idea of having the youth orchestra play on a Millikan Decatur Symphony Orchestra concert, beefed up by not the full Millikan Decatur Symphony, as is sometimes done in side-by-sides between a parent orchestra and its youth orchestra, but just the Millikan student string players, so that they get a truly full string section and at the same time are able to have their own wind players play the solo parts and shine in some significant repertoire.
And then you wrap off with a kind of an appropriate piece for the full orchestra.
Yeah, although I didn't even realize it when I programmed it, this is one of those pieces I have never done and have been wanting to do for years, and it came up on our as a suggestion from a player in the orchestra as well. It's the Bizet C Major Symphony, a real one-of-a-kind work. There's nothing quite like it in the repertoire, if only because he himself wrote no other symphonies. And the story behind it is that he wrote it as a 17-year-old student at the Paris Conservatoire. He intended it to be performed. He really almost thought of it as just an exercise. It passed from hand to hand, wound up on a shelf in the conservatoire until the mid-1930s, when it was discovered by opera conductor of the time, Felix Weingartner, said, "Oh my gosh, do you realize what you've got here?" And so it has really only been heard for less than 100 years, but it is a total miracle of a piece, in that it has the complete transparency and balance and symmetry of a classical style, with the melodic gift of the Bizet we think of in terms of Carmen and his lyrical works. It's just tuneful and bright and unique and utterly delightful, and having been written by a 17-year-old, it fits very well into this young artist concert.
Thank you.
So I think Michael Luxner described that piece pretty well with its sparkle and energy, and a performance here by the New York Philharmonic conducted by Leonard Bernstein. Here on Live and Local on FM 90.9, where our broadcast is supported in part by Community Blood Services of Illinois, working together with volunteer donors to provide blood products for hospitals and patients throughout our region. Blood donations help save the lives of the injured and critically ill. Information is available at bloodservices.org. The Champaign-Urbana Symphony Orchestra is also doing a concert this weekend at the Krannert Center in Urbana, and in just a few moments we'll be talking with their music director, Stephen Altop, about that program that includes music by Walter Piston, Mozart, and Beethoven. That's the rather monumental opening of the Seventh Symphony of Ludwig van Beethoven, a performance by the Berlin Philharmonic conducted by Claudio Abbado here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. And that piece ends up being quite lighthearted almost all the way through. There's a notable exception in the second movement. It will be on the concert Saturday night by the Champaign-Urbana Symphony Orchestra, which will be conducted by its music director, Stephen Altop, still in his inaugural season as music director. He's my guest this portion of Live and Local. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Kevin. It's a pleasure to be here again.
Hard, I would imagine, in your inaugural season or anybody's inaugural season with any orchestra, not to play Beethoven.
That's absolutely right. Beethoven's at the foundation of the orchestral repertoire, and you probably share the love that I have for Beethoven. It's just a special thing to do Beethoven with a fine symphony orchestra. There's just this logic and structure and excitement around his music like none other.
Is there a particular reason you decided it had to be the seventh in your first year?
Well, I'm fond of saying about the Beethoven symphonies that my favorite is whichever one I'm conducting at that moment, and that's basically true. But I harbor a particular love for Beethoven's seventh and ninth symphonies. Those are probably the two that just speak to me most deeply. And the seventh, you put it well, it is quite bright and energetic for most of it. Even that opening is just like a flash of light. And then it gives way to this rollicking 6-8 dotted rhythm that just permeates the whole first movement. But then, and of course, the third movement and the fourth movement are quite high-spirited. Beethoven used the term unbuttoned, especially for the last movement. But then the second movement is so dark in contrast to the others, this prevailing ostinato bookended at either end of the movement by this one sort of open-ended, ambiguous woodwind chord. It's just an amazing piece of music, and it comes from over 10 years after Beethoven had basically announced to himself that he would continue to live and write and not be overcome by his deafness, and this is the height of his middle period, 1813.
Do I remember right that the second movement you just referenced is referred to as a funeral march?
Well, there are those who could call it as such. It's very famously used in our popular culture in the King's Speech. And as the king is about to make his most dramatic speech, they play the second movement of this symphony by a German composer, which I found a bit ironic since it's the King of England talking about this looming war with Germany. Maybe it was intentional. I don't know. It's a fantastic movie either way. But it has a brooding quality that some could certainly call funereal.
And a lot of conductors over the years have led it probably funereally.
That's true, but one thing, it's a real chiaroscuro movement because it starts in A minor, but then on two occasions brightens into the major key, and it is exactly like the sun coming out.
Unfortunately, I don't have that part queued up. How far does that happen in? You remember?
That happens about
the first time.
2.5 minutes in.
Well, maybe we'll get into that.
Yeah, maybe we will.
Here's some of that second movement of the Beethoven Seventh. Again, it's Claudio Abbado. I should say, unfortunately now, the late Claudio Abbado.
Yes, what a loss. What a great conductor he was.
Absolutely. And with the Berlin Philharmonic here.
Thank you.
Well, the sun came out.
Yes.
And we did get to that portion. The second movement of Beethoven's Seventh Symphony, Claudio Abbado leading the Berlin Philharmonic. And Stephen Altaut, my guest, this portion of Live and Local will, of course, lead the Champaign-Urbana Symphony Saturday evening in that piece, which will close the concert. The concert opens with a piece that I'm willing to bet just about nobody in the audience will have heard before, although it's by no means a new piece of music by Walter Pista.
That's one reason we're doing it.
Yeah. Tell me. I never heard it before until just listening to it, this recording before.
We'll open this concert called Classic Gems with a piece from the 20th century by the American composer Walter Piston, who was a very important composer teaching in New York, wrote a famous book on orchestration, and a very good composer. Perhaps his most famous piece is called The Incredible Flutist. But this is a serenata or little symphony in three movements from 1956, which he wrote for the Louisville Orchestra. And it follows sort of a basic fast, slow, fastest form from classical times. And the reason I paired it with these works by Mozart and Beethoven is it's quite neoclassical. It's a 20th century take on classical symmetry and gestures and form. And it also fits perfectly the orchestra that's playing the Beethoven Seventh with the addition of one harp. So it's kind of a favorite of mine in a program like this. I'm very fond of American music and like to include it at all possible. My hope is that the audience will love the pieces by Beethoven and the Mozart, which we'll probably talk about in a moment, and that they'll find a new friend in this serenata by Walter Piston.
Here's the opening movement, a recording by the New York Chamber Symphony. There's two different orchestras on this recording. I had to make sure this is the one that is playing. New York Chamber Symphony of the 92nd Street Y, conducted by Gerard Schwartz.
Thank you.
the opening movement of the Serenata for Orchestra by American composer Walter Piston, a performance here by the New York Chamber Symphony of the 92nd Street Y, Gerard Schwartz conducting from an all-Piston recording on the Delos label. This piece will open Saturday's concert by the Champaign-Urbana Symphony, conducted by my guests, this portion of Live and Local, Stephen Alltop. And then, so you referred to it as neoclassical, something that sort of uses an older style in a modern idiom, I guess.
Exactly. In the 20th century, we have these pieces by a variety of composers, including Stravinsky, that we call neo-baroque, like his octet and a number of other pieces, and then also neoclassical, and it's a way of taking 20th century harmonic language and putting it into these gestures and orchestrations of a classic time, and that's why I think this is a fresh way to introduce a program of music by Mozart and Beethoven.
Well, and in this case, when you say classical, you're not referring to classical music as a whole, but the classic era of
exactly the period
Haydn,
we call the kind of late Age of Enlightenment common practice period of about, you know, the late 1770s through basically the death of Beethoven in 1827.
You have a soloist in this 17th piano concerto by Mozart, one of your colleagues at Northwestern University.
Yes. I'm delighted to bring Jim Giles, or James Giles, who teaches on our piano faculty at Northwestern University. I've worked with Jim several times before in contemporary music, and I've been eager to give him an opportunity to play a work like this beautiful concerto in G major by Mozart.
And, well, since you mentioned particularly the beauty, a little bit of the second movement maybe, and then we'll touch on the third movement.
Absolutely. The second movement is just so singing and cantabile in its nature.
And a lot for the orchestra to do before you
always
ever even
beautiful.
Get to the pianist.
It's one of the glories of these piano concertos by Mozart, all he gives for the orchestra to do.
Thank you.
some of the second movement of the 17th Piano Concerto by Mozart in G major. The pianist in this recording, Maria Joao Pires, with the Chamber Orchestra of Europe, conducted by Claudio Abbado, here on Live and Local. And James Giles will be solos with the Champaign-Urbana Symphony Orchestra Saturday night at 7:30 at the Krannert Center in Urbana, Stephen Alltop conducting. And the last movement you were just telling me is a great way to end the first half of a concert.
Oh, it's just so uplifting. It has a beautiful theme, and it's a set of theme and variations.
We're just doing the tiniest little survey of music on the CU Symphony Concert Saturday, just for fun, and as deliberate teaser here, Maria Joao Pires, again, music by Mozart, on Live and Local. It'll be played by James Giles. And, Steve, an interesting story. Again, if I didn't say this, we'd get the best stuff would be off the record. So on the record, something interesting about this piece.
Well, we were just I was just noticing that the moment that theme for the last moment comes in, if one were to think of one of Mozart's operatic characters, it would be Papageno, just the combination of the flute and the very bird-like element. But interestingly enough, Mozart had a pet starling that he taught this theme to, and the bird got all of the first like 17 notes right and then always messed up the last couple notes of the theme. Mozart couldn't fix that. Once the bird had learned it, there was no unlearning it for that. And this starling played an interesting role in his life, because the bird died just a week after his father. And Mozart had no written mention of his father's death, but then he wrote this ode to his starling named Vogelstar, or Bird Star for starling. And you can tell when you read this ode that it was actually about his father. Complicated relationship, to say the least.
Yeah, exactly. Well, not a complicated program. A really entertaining program you have. Walter Piston's Serenata, Mozart's 17th Concerto, Beethoven's 7th Symphony, Saturday night, 7:30, the Champaign-Urbana Symphony Orchestra conducted by Stephen Alltop at the Krannert Center in Urbana. For more information, you can go to cusymphony.org and order your tickets there or order them at the Krannert, either way, probably.
Hopefully it will be a really good excuse to venture out on a chilly evening for some very warm music.
Our broadcast today is made possible with support from these business partners: Fertilizer Dealer Supply of Philo, Cannon Farms of Camargo, Jarman Center of Tuscola, and the Andersons of Champaign. These business partners join the Friends of WILL in making great programs possible, and we thank you very much. This is 90.9 WILL FM and HD Urbana with Translator, W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music and More for Central Illinois. We're a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. Stephen, thanks very much for coming in.
Thanks. Always a pleasure to be here.
And I found a recording of James Giles doing a take on an interesting tune that I think eventually will recognize.